their data centers at, you know, 5 nines, 99.99999% uptime. We do have tornadoes, very, very low overall natural disaster. Facility that's providing space for your machine to run. So we're not required to KYC. You know, your machine is just sitting on our rack space and you're paying us to keep that machine online. When you mine with us, you set up your own mining pool account, and then that Bitcoin is sent straight to you.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast. I'm your host, Michael Jordan. Just had a fun conversation with Adam Haynes, founder and CEO of Simple Mining. We talk about their business, his journey into Bitcoin, the mining industry at large, and even touch a bit at the end on some hot topics like the centralization concerns about mining hardware and mining pools. So it was a very fun conversation, very informative on a topic that I know relatively little about and I'm continuing to learn. So I hope you enjoy the discussion with Adam. Alrighty, like I said in the intro, I've got Adam here. Adam, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. Like I was telling you offline, mining is probably one of the facets of Bitcoin I know least about. And I'm learning, I'm growing. I've had a couple of folks who have brought some, have contributed some knowledge to me over the show. But this is sort of a different topic in terms of what you all do. It's cliche, but let's just start with your Bitcoin journey. Tell me how you got into it, how you found it, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. So it started back in 2020, actually. Kind of grew out of the first business that I started, which was a cell phone repair business. So we were, you know, had a business fixing phones, computers, you know, tablets and all that good stuff. We started getting some requests to fix some Bitcoin miners, some S9s at the time, and we did all the microsoddering repairs and like, yeah, we can, you know, we can fix these. It's just a computer, you know, right up our wheelhouse. And one of our employees was also doing some Bitcoin mining at the time and some Ethereum mining as well. So, you know, we were kind of a little bit bored during COVID and just kind of started playing around with, you know, mining some Ethereum. And then I started kind of doing the deep dive into Bitcoin. I read the Bitcoin standard. You know, basically immediately got orange pilled and was like, okay, how do we get more Bitcoin? And so we were doing the mining in the back of the store with Ethereum, realized that wasn't, you know, the best route to do this, you know, at scale, especially. So started looking into, you know, getting our own ASIC mining machines to mine just Bitcoin and, you know, find a low cost of power. Thankfully here in Iowa, we have, you know, very low energy costs and, made a great connection at a utility company that was willing to work with us and started self-mining at our first site in early 2021. So that's kind of how we got into it.
So what year was that you started receiving hardware for repairs?
Late 2020, yeah.
Okay, yep. So later in the year, okay.
Yeah. So, and then we kind of transitioned into early 2021 and got up and going, so.
Okay. And so it started with self-mining.
Yep.
And it's gradually transitioned. So could you explain Simple Mining, your company, and what it is you do, your revenue streams, and how you serve clients?
Yeah. So we're just a vertically integrated, you know, Bitcoin mining company. We offer hosting as well as, you know, repair services. We do repairs for some of the largest public and private miners across North America. And I think that when we first got into the market, you know, we were self-miner, and then we realized that there was a, you know, an opportunity to provide a really great hosting service. You know, we kind of saw, you know, some holes in the market there for a great hosting provider. And we thought with our background in just, you know, offering good service at our cell phone repair business, we could kind of translate that into the hosting service for Bitcoin mining. Especially for, you know, retail clients, you know, our MOQ is one unit. And we thought, especially also if we could pair that with our repair experience, you know, to keep the machines online, we could have a really good offering. So we started doing that and kind of continuing to build out our offering and try and add value adds. So we do, you know, little things like offering precision billing, where if the machines off for even a few minutes, you're getting credited for that downtime. We include all the repairs for the first 12 months. So if your machine has an issue, regardless of whether it's under warranty or not, The warranty process can actually be quite time consuming and a hassle, to say the least. So we'll actually just repair it, whether it's under warranty or not, and get it back online. Just because our goal is to keep, you know, machines up and running, because if they're not running, they're not making any Bitcoin. And then we have a few other, you know, value adds, such as like a marketplace where you could resell your equipment at any point in time, and a pause period where if your mining ever becomes unprofitable, we're never going to force anybody to mine at a loss. So you can pause your machines for you know, no penalties, and not get billed for you know, your machine.
Got it. So basically you're just providing good competitive service. I like it. excuse me. I apologize. I'm a bit under the weather still, following the Bitcoin conference. Repairs. I'm curious. So Bitcoin mining is pretty geographically dispersed. It sounds like you service a lot of big players.
Yeah.
Are they physically shipping equipment to you? Do you have technicians around the country that go in and help on site? How does that work?
Yeah. So all of our technicians are here at our headquarters in Cedar Falls. We have about a dozen full-time repair technicians. And repair is one of those things that I came from a background of, electronics repair and microsoldering. So it was, pretty easy for us to transition into these repairs. However, it is a pretty, you know, technically sophisticated repair process, and especially on these particular machines, you can't just pull up a YouTube video and learn how to fix a Bitcoin miner, you know, compared to like you can watch a YouTube video on how to replace your iPhone screen. So it was definitely a learning process, and some of the learning materials out there aren't the best, or they're in Chinese and it's, you know, difficult. So there definitely are other repair providers out there, but I think that it's fairly limited, especially the more advanced repairs. There's some repairs that are pretty easy that, you know, you can do pretty quickly with minimal skills. But there's also some pretty high level sophisticated repairs that require some, you know, advanced diagnostic and troubleshooting.
So I would imagine the marketplace for the marketplace is probably broad for people who are skilled or capable of, you know, learning to repair these machines. But are they primarily Bitcoiners? Like, are you finding like Bitcoiners who are passionate about mining, or are you finding like computer technicians who are like, hey, yeah, I can, this, my skills translate and I can kind of figure this out?
Yeah, exactly. A little bit of both. We definitely try and educate our employees as much as possible. And, you know, we talk about Bitcoin a lot, and every, you know, once a quarter we'll hold a kind of a Bitcoin 101 to you know, bring new employees up to speed and try and educate them as much as possible about it. But we certainly also have, you know, employees that just graduated from their, you know, local college in electrical engineering, and they don't know a single thing about Bitcoin, and they, you know, they just want to put their skills to work. And, those are great situations too, as well, because I think it gives us a good opportunity to educate, you know, our employees more and more about Bitcoin. So,
yeah. So have you had some success orange pilling some of the folks you brought on board for?
Not quite every employee yet, but we're definitely making good progress.
Yeah, you're right. Once they read the Bitcoin standard, you just got to get that book in their hands. They'll get it figured out. And then, in terms of your hosting business, is it, do you actually own and operate the sites, or okay?
Yep, exactly.
Go on.
Yeah, we're vertically integrated, so we own and operate all of our sites. So we have it's a big thing in this industry to have control over, you know, your assets and your operations. So we made that decision pretty early on that we wanted to own and operate all of our infrastructure.
Did you mention where your sites are? Are you all in Iowa? You said the cost of electricity is.
Yeah, so all of our sites are in Iowa. We currently operate three facilities, and we're going to have a fourth facility going online here very soon. So by the end of August, we'll be operating just about 50 megawatts online. Iowa is a pretty beneficial state to do this business. Iowa is the number one state in the country for wind power production from a percentage standpoint. So Texas beats us out from total wind production, but percentage wise, we're the highest in the country. So that leads to really low cost of energy. The climate here is much more friendly to doing this business compared to, you know, some warmer states like, you know, if you're in West Texas, it's 100 degrees every day for 4 months straight. That's pretty difficult to operate, you know, all of this equipment in those conditions, that versus the average high temperature here in Iowa is, you know, about 82 degrees during the summer months.
Oh, okay. I'm in Missouri, so I'm just south of you in St. Louis. It's, I guess it gets a little bit hotter here. It's 95 today. So
yeah, it's a little bit warmer today. But overall, it's, you know, pretty moderate. And then one of the last things that's beneficial, which again helps keep our energy costs low, is the state of Iowa has some tax incentives. So the energy cost is sales tax exempt. Data processing is electricity consumption associated with data processing is sales tax exempt in Iowa. The reason they did this is to promote economic growth within the state. So four of the largest companies in the world have data centers here in Iowa. Apple's building one currently. Google has one. Microsoft and Facebook all have data centers in Iowa.
No kidding. And I guess, too, I would imagine you're not immune from, but probably have to deal with, not like on a fault line. I mean, maybe tornadoes here and there. I don't know. But like some of the risks that people think about, you know, in terms of weather events, catastrophic events.
Exactly. So that's another reason why these data centers are located in Iowa, because they evaluate all those different, you know, energy, you know, costs, also natural disaster risk, because they have to operate their data centers at, you know, 99.99999% uptime. So Iowa does have, we do have tornadoes, but if you look, you know, risk adjusted, it's a very, very low overall natural disaster risk state.
Yeah. So do you like, if I wanted to purchase a miner and host through you, that's an option. Are you all still operating your own mining devices as well?
Exactly.
What's sort of the weight for you on that? Is it primarily hosted, you know, for clients or for your own?
Yeah, exactly. So we're about anywhere from 15 to 20% self-mining. It fluctuates because we regularly carry inventory for machines. So, you know, if you wanted to buy a machine today, you can buy a machine and you're online same day as payment. We found that to be just another value add that we can provide, you know, rather than having to wait, you know, a few weeks to get the machine shipped in, like you can start mining today, same day as payment. So our hash rate fluctuates between, you know, 15 and 20% of our overall operation. You know, we want to continue to grow that as well.
And so the way it might work mechanically is like, if I wanted to purchase a miner and host with you, I might effectively be taking over one of your self miners.
Correct.
And so when that happens, are you purchasing a new miner and upping that self miner? Are you just are you kind of balancing, trying to keep it in that 15 to 20% range?
Exactly. We have kind of a constant rotating inventory where we have, you know, new inventory coming in and then we're selling our existing inventory and all that good stuff.
Okay. What's the biggest part of your business? I mean, is it like the buying and selling, like functioning as something of an exchange, or is it just your self mining operations? Like where do you see the most revenue growth?
Yeah, sure. So certainly the hosting is the largest part of our business. And that's the most scalable when you look at, you know, running a Bitcoin mining business. Is unfortunately we don't have infinite capital. It's a common question that we get asked is like, you know, why don't you just do all the mining yourselves? And we certainly would, but we just wouldn't be able to, you know, continue to scale, obviously. And we think that we can have a really great hosting offering where, you know, we're charging between 7 and 8 cents for electricity all in, along with all the other value adds that we previously mentioned. And, you know, the average U.S. residential cost of power is about 16 cents. So we're half the cost of power if you were to plug it in your garage, and then you don't have to deal with the heat, the noise, you know, the issues, the maintenance, and all those other sorts of things. Setting up the electrical infrastructure. The electrical infrastructure is a huge component. To set up electrical infrastructure to run power at this level is a significant amount of CapEx.
Yeah, that's wow. That's a big difference. I didn't realize how significant the. But that's what people talk about is when mm-hmm. when you've got a competitive advantage on the cost of electricity. You know, Bitcoin mining is a great option. You've hit on a few things, but could you maybe just walk through like your value proposition, some of the differentiators that that make simple mining unique?
Yeah. So I think, we're never going to try and sell you on a, you know, return on investment. We're just going to sell you on our service, you know, kind of what we previously talked about with all those different value adds, with the pause period, the marketplace, the repairs included, the precision billing. We're going to operate your machine at a very high level. Since we started the company, all of our clients have had over 98% uptime on average. And that's what we're going to provide. We're going to provide great customer service, great communication. We're going to keep your machine online and hashing so that you're mining Bitcoin. You know, it doesn't do any good to, you know, buy a machine and have it offline for months on end. So we're going to keep your machine online and we're going to operate at a really high level. Another common question that we get asked is, you know, is it better to mine Bitcoin or is it better to buy Bitcoin? You know, personally, I think it's a mix of both. The reason I personally like mining is it definitely removes the emotions from the situation. You know, you buy your miner and it's basically a daily DCA. You're getting Bitcoin every single day and you pay your utility bill once a month. And then there's some additional, advantages of mining as well. Mining is a business, so you can operate this, you know, with expenses that you can write off. You can, take advantage of depreciation on the equipment to really, you know, have a tax advantage situation. And, you know, I'm not going to promote, you know, exactly, you know, your tax situation or this or that, but it's something that you can, you know, contact a qualified tax professional and see how those things might help out your situation. Yeah. And then on the buying side of things, you know, I don't think it's all necessarily mining. I think if there's a great buying opportunity that presents itself, you know, by all means, buy the dip.
Yeah. Do you have to KYC? Like if I wanted to buy a miner, do I have to KYC?
Sure. Yeah. We're not required to KYC. So we're not getting in between you and your Bitcoin. We're simply just, the facility that's providing, you know, the space for your machine to run. So we're not required to KYC. Your machine is just sitting on our rack space and you're paying us to keep that machine online essentially. So, when you mine with us, you set up your own mining pool account. And we have some great pool partners to get fees as low as 0.5%. And then that Bitcoin is sent straight to you. We don't get in between, you know, you and your Bitcoin. That all goes directly to you and, pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I think that's a really compelling reason for a lot of people to consider this sort of thing is if they can find a partner with a cost advantageous mining operation, and they can add a layer of privacy to the way that they're accumulating Bitcoin. That's sure. It's much harder to do, you know, buying peer to peer. There's a little more of a technical, you know, hurdle to overcome. Are there other regulatory? So I guess you're not operating like as a financial services company. Are there other regulatory challenges or people you have to deal with? I mean, or is it just kind of like the energy, the grid or others that you have to sort of work with and make sure you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's?
Yeah. There's not too much. Thankfully, all of our sites are on grid here in Iowa. And more or less, the only things that we have to comply with is make sure, you know, when we're building our sites, everything's up to electrical code. We're complying with local, you know, planning and zoning laws and those other sorts of requirements, but that's about it. It's nothing too crazy.
Have you considered any off-grid sites? Is that something that's on your radar?
No, we haven't considered any off-grid sites. It's definitely not our area of expertise and we want to stick to what we know. I'm certainly aware that there is some unique maybe opportunities with off-grid, but also they present additional challenges. And it's a situation where we're very, you know, comfortable with our existing operation on grid. You know, we feel we have a very competitive cost of power and the reliability is also extremely important too, as well. Once you start getting off-grid, you start adding additional layers of complexity, which we think would potentially, disrupt the high level of service that we offer. So.
Yeah, I imagine if to go that route, you'd become dependent on sort of a new skill set that would be required to, you know, to whether it's solar or wind. Like now suddenly you're having to operate that, you know, all of that. And today you can just rely on the grid that's already producing electricity and the service providers. Yeah. Okay, so let's shift focus for a minute. So, what is the landscape when it comes to mining right now, like the availability of hardware, supply chains. I've heard sort of different, you know, I know coming out of COVID, a lot of a lot of potential issues with supply chains. Is that something that's affected your business, and where do we stand today?
Yeah, so it's definitely still an ongoing issue, you know, especially when you're talking about electrical infrastructure of this size, you know, 5-10 megawatts at a time is a lot of infrastructure. And there's certainly lead times for that infrastructure. Thankfully, we have some pretty good partners where we are able to source equipment in a timely manner. But there's still going to be some challenges, and that ebbs and flows with the market. So, you know, as, you know, Bitcoin price rises and, you know, maybe mining looks a little bit more profitable at that time, certainly there'll be increased demand for, you know, new infrastructure and then also mining equipment. And that can lead to some challenges in procuring equipment. But right now things are pretty good overall. You know, we're able to work with our partners to source the infrastructure that we need to continue growing without really any delays. But certainly in you know, really significant bull runs, there's going to be supply chain challenges.
Have you noticed any differences or any variation in that since the halving? And what has that played? Has that impacted your business in any meaningful way?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it certainly has impacted our business. You know, the block reward got cut exactly in half, which is you know, great for the Bitcoin protocol to operate exactly as it's intended. But as you know, as a miner, it's something that is not necessarily fun, but everybody knows that it's coming and going to happen. So it's something that is kind of factored in, you know, well in advance, knowing that that's going to happen. So yes, our, you know, our self-mining revenue and for our hosted clients, certainly, you know, that block reward was cut in half, but it was something that we knew that was coming and, you know, still profitable, obviously, at this time. So
how do you prepare, like, financially and operationally for that? I mean, are you like just kind of ready to wind down machines if, in the event that price doesn't, you know, move upward as quickly as you might have thought? Or are you like running models for what if price dips, what if price remains sort of as it has, relatively constant, or, you know, it triples?
Yep.
Is that like kind of how you view this and you think about running your business? And then what do you do about it?
Yeah, of course. So any, you know, Bitcoin miner in the world understands that these machines are only going to have a certain lifespan. You know, from a economic standpoint, you know, the machines, you could plug them in, you know, 10 years from now, and they'd probably turn on a hash, but it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to make financial sense to do so. So I think you try and model those things as best as you can based on your power cost, and you can understand maybe a somewhat reasonable runway that you might have. I think this is a really beneficial, you know, value add that we provide, is that pause period where, in the event that, you know, our hosted clients' mining does become unprofitable, they can go on their client dashboard, select the machines that they want to pause, click pause, and then they're not going to get charged for those machines. And they can do that, you know, they can turn them off or turn them back on at any time. So it makes it really flexible where if Bitcoin price is significantly depressed and, you know, profitability doesn't look as good, they can enter the pause period. And then if Bitcoin price rises and things, you know, we go into a bull run, they can resume and obviously mine profitably again. So it's a very flexible offering that we provide.
Have you seen much of that? People turning off their devices as it sort of remain constant in that $60,000 range, or most people?
Some of the older equipment that we have, you know, we have some machines from, you know, back that were released in 2019 that are kind of right on that line right now, where we have some clients that are taking advantage of that pause period. Certainly a majority of, you know, all of our machines are still running and profitable, but there are some clients that are taking advantage of that have some older, more inefficient equipment.
Got it. And they're just sitting on that because at a certain price it's profitable, I assume. Mm-hmm. And because of the flexibility you offer, they just pause when it's not. And then, yeah. So it sounds like you've got some clients who are relatively aware, because I have a miner hosted at a place that actually no longer accepts new clients for that. And I was talking with your colleague Nick about maybe moving it there, which it turns out is going to be cost prohibitive because of a cancellation clause.
Sure.
But we're actually looking at maybe just adding a miner with you all. Okay, so from the outside looking in, it seems like the mining industry is always evolving, whether it's new sources of energy, new machines. What are some of the like most important trends that you're watching closely that you feel like you need to keep up with given your business?
Sure. So mining is always evolving. There's always new equipment, more efficient equipment coming online. It's of our opinion that is going to, you know, those gains in the equipment is going to, you know, probably slow over time. The equipment has gotten, you know, so much more efficient. And if you look at the individual increases between equipment, the gains are sort of starting to diminish over time. So the equipment is getting more efficient, but it's, you know, it went from getting 10 times more efficient to 5 times to 2 times to now we're, you know, now the equipment is every model recently has been maybe a 15% increase in efficiency. So we're expected to see kind of those, efficiency gains diminish over time. Similar to analogy that I give is, you know, first you had the bag phone and then you had the Razer flip phone. And then the iPhone, and those were all significantly, different, you know, changes, magnitudes, better than the previous model. Now the difference between the iPhone 14 and the iPhone 15 is almost, you know, negligible at this point in time. So we expect it to kind of continue to trend in that direction. They will certainly still get better over time. And then on the, you know, on the infrastructure and on the energy cost side of things, everybody's always looking for more power and also obviously, cheap electricity, you know, and I think we're in a really, really great position here in Iowa. Just they're continuing to add more and more wind energy every single day. There's more and more, supply coming online of energy, which will help definitely keep our prices low. So, I think we have a really good opportunity to continue expanding and, always keeping up with the, you know, latest things that are happening and trying to adapt accordingly.
Hey there, just a quick break and we'll be right back to the show. I wanted to spend a minute sharing with you how the Bitcoin Way helps individuals achieve self-custody and self-sovereignty over their money, their online life, and having a plan B as an individual. The Bitcoin Way can help you properly custody your Bitcoin using only air-gapped, open-source, Bitcoin-only hardware wallets. We help you set up and run your node. It doesn't matter if you're brand new to Bitcoin, if you've been in Bitcoin 10 years, there's a good chance that there's a gap in your self-custody setup, and we can help resolve that and give you confidence and peace of mind. When it comes to your online life, you are being tracked and watched and spied on by governments, by corporate interests all over the place. We can give you confidence that even logging onto Wi-Fi at your airport or at your local coffee shop, you are protecting yourself and remaining self-sovereign and private. Finally, if you want help adding to your passport repertoire, we've got a citizenship program whereby we establish temporary residency and walk you through the entire process, white glove service, boots on the ground through citizenship. It is important in a time of crazy economic and political upheaval that you have optionality when it comes to where you're going to live, reside, and spend your life. Check out thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free consult with the team to learn more about our services and understand how we can help you achieve full self-sovereignty.
So for context, you talked about some of like the older machines, you know, maybe made in 2019 versus something you could buy on the market brand new today.
Sure.
What's the difference in terms of energy efficiency and, sure, and hash rate that you see?
Yeah, so some of the equipment back in 2019 was like an S19 95 terahash, for example. The efficiency of that particular machine is about 34.5 joules per terahash. We have S21 Pro machines in stock today, and those are about 15 joules per terahash. So, you know, a little bit over a double in efficiency gains between that particular machine and this machine. So, we're going to continue to see efficiency gains. That was a little over a double in about a, you know, 5-year period, if you will. I think we're going to be hard pressed to see, you know, another double at this point in time, but we'll certainly see what happens. You could look at, the example of maybe the S9, which was, you know, about 100 joules per terahash, at the time. And then that, you know, we saw the next generation come out, you know, maybe S19 about 5 years after that, and that was 34. So much more than double there, little over double now. I think it's going to continue to see diminished returns in the efficiency gains of the equipment over time.
Yeah. Are most clients, and maybe there's not like a typical client profile, but like, would it be more common to see someone coming in and saying, hey, I want to pay a premium, get the best, the fastest machine today, brand new, or someone who comes in and says, hey, I could get a pretty steep discount on an older machine and run that? Do you see, like, is it kind of a mix, or is there a preference that clients tend to have?
Exactly. It's a personal preference. I would say certainly the majority of our clients are looking for, you know, the newest, most efficient equipment. We have an upgrade program where you can essentially sell your old equipment in our marketplace and upgrade into a new machine for no fees. Typically, there's a small fee on the marketplace if you want to sell your machine, but we waive that fee if you want to sell your equipment and then upgrade into a newer machine. So that's kind of another offering that we have. But yeah, certainly the majority is upgrading into, you know, the newest, most efficient equipment, such as the S21 or the S21 Pro. We do have some clients that are definitely taking advantage of that, the older equipment that is a little bit more, lower in price. And it's personal preference at the end of the day.
Is that where the ROI tends to be highest, though, is in purchasing the newest equipment, even if you're paying more, obviously, up front for that machine?
Sure. Yeah, ROI is something that we don't really talk about too much. It's anyone's best guess. You know, we always say we don't know what's going to happen in the short to medium term on Bitcoin or with the network difficulty. Certainly long term, we're very bullish on Bitcoin. We're also very bullish that network difficulty is going to continue to rise over time. So those are the two factors in Bitcoin mining, which you can't control. You can't control price and you can't control difficulty. And, it would be irresponsible of us to speculate on what would be the best potential, return on investment, this machine versus that machine. It's anyone's, best guess. And those are things that, we really recommend to our clients to kind of sort through and do their own due diligence on. So
yeah, that's a smart answer. Do you take on only individual clients? Are there institutions coming into the mining space with you?
Yeah. We have, like I said, we have a MOQ of one unit. But we also have some institutional clients, publicly traded, that we have thousands of machines online for them. So as well. So we're really fit for any miner, the individual enthusiast or a large scale miner. We have offerings to kind of work with any type of client. So
are those institutional clients, are those like Bitcoin companies and miners, or are they just general, like a retailer or just a manufacturer who's like, hey, part of our business, we want to start stocking up Bitcoin the way someone like MicroStrategy or Semler Scientific has? Is it both, or is it predominantly?
Exactly.
Okay.
A little bit of both. You have large public and private companies, just looking to get, either that's their core business or they're looking to get, like you said, exposure to it.
So you've got a front row view to some of the adoption that's taking place that a lot of us can't see.
Yeah, it's been really cool to see over the last couple of years, especially.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the day that, anyone with either excess energy or cash laying around is like, we either need to buy Bitcoin, we need to mine Bitcoin, we need to contribute to this in some way, because obviously they're otherwise losing value.
Right.
So it's I'm sure these are exciting times for you all. So how would you frame like the biggest challenges to your business and maybe mining in general?
Sure.
I know it's just cutthroat and it's very competitive, but what are like some of the two or three of the biggest challenges you tend to face?
Sure. Yeah, definitely it's a very, very competitive business. I'd say definitely the biggest challenge is finding that low cost of energy and then putting all of the infrastructure components together at a cost that makes sense. Because again, energy, this amount of energy is extremely CapEx intensive, and being able to locate these sites where we can have access to the amount of power that we need in the first place at a cost that makes sense, it is certainly very challenging. And I think it's something that we've been able to do a really good job of. But there's obviously been a lot of work and development and relationships that have gone into that. So,
yeah. Are your, so on the energy front, are your contracts with the utility companies up there, are those like long terms where you lock in a lower rate for the amount that you're going to use? Or is that just sort of the same way like a residential property would, you know, pay whatever the going rate is?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we're able to lock in long-term agreements, and it's a situation where we are, utility companies have been very, very happy with us because we are a flexible load that is buyer of energy 24/7 at low prices. 98%, 99% of the time, energy is abundant and cheap. However, there are certain events during the year, such as the hottest days of the year, the coldest days of the year, where you know, energy prices and the supply and demand can get out of whack. The grid is just a system that has to operate at 60 hertz 24/7. Supply has to equal demand, and we really help be a flexible load that can help balance those things out. So we will participate in curtailment or, you know, load shedding situations with each of our utility partners, and we really help become a load balancing mechanism where, especially as we're continuing to see more and more renewables come online. I think we can all agree renewables are great. However, they are also intermittent. So it's not a constant delivery of power. If the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining, you know, the power still has to come from somewhere. So we can really help match those ebbs and flows in the availability of power from renewables by, you know, running when there's an abundance of power, and then if there's you know, no wind and no sun, we're able to shut down during those times where there's you know, less supply of energy, which usually translates to, you know, higher energy costs. So we are you know, just a great resource for the utility companies, and I think they've been very, you know, happy to have us as a partner.
What is, so it sounds like wind is sort of one of the primaries. Yeah. There is there like a nuclear industry there, or are they just burning fossil fuels for energy when wind is, you know, when there isn't wind?
Yeah. Yeah. There's not much in Iowa other than cornfields and windmills, but, yeah, the other sources of energy generation are going to be a mix of natural gas, coal. You're going to have, you know, a little bit of hydro, a little bit of nuclear, but, you know, in Iowa, especially predominantly, it is wind energy. Of course, when there's no wind energy, they have to use those other resources. But usually in Iowa, it's pretty windy all the time. So we have a pretty good amount of wind generation on average.
Yeah. Nice flat plains for the wind to blow. Okay, so I want to, is, you know, for the last bit here, I want to talk a little bit about maybe some hotter topics in Bitcoin mining. And so, as I told you, this is not something I'm an expert on by any stretch, but I had like Bitcoin Mechanic on a while back, and you hear about centralization concerns in Bitcoin mining. And specifically, you've got pools, the centralization concerns around pools, and then around the hardware manufacturing. Sure. Are those concerns of yours? And could you maybe step back? Could you sort of, for anyone who is newer in listening to this and who I couldn't articulate to as well as you, could you maybe frame out like what those concerns are a bit for some sure. people around centralization, and then give me your opinion and your, you know, concerns to the extent that they exist?
Yeah, sure. So from the manufacturer perspective, there is a, you know, Bitmain holds dominant, you know, market share in this industry from a manufacturing standpoint of the physical Bitcoin mining machines. You know, they're predominantly all that we operate at across all of our sites. And, you know, certainly there are some concerns there. In my opinion, I'm overall less concerned with them. I think if anything were to happen, it would be, you know, the downfall of their business to a certain degree if they tried to pull anything, and the free market would kind of do its thing, and, you know, other competition would come into play. And you're already starting to see that. You know, MicroBT has certainly been expanding its market share, and there's other manufacturers that are entering the space, such as Auradine, which is an American company. So that's on the manufacturing side. On the pool side, you see really two dominant pools in Foundry and Antpool. And same thing there. In my opinion, I think the concerns are, you know, maybe a little bit overblown. The pool is a race to zero. So whoever offers, you know, the most beneficial, you know, rates for mining pools is going to attract the most amount of customers. However, miners are definitely incentivized to operate, you know, to work together and to you know, do things according to the best interests of the network. And if certainly if something started to happen there, I think you would see, you know, moving to a different pool, if anything were to happen. So, yeah, but those are the kind of the two points there.
Yeah, no, I think you said something that resonates. So, Bitcoin Mechanic, I think he's a really smart guy, and so much of what he says, I mean, resonates. And I appreciate that he's bringing light to a topic a lot of people just sort of turn a blind eye to. I think you hit on something important, and has sort of been my relative skepticism of the concerns, and that is that the free market steps into work. Now, that doesn't mean that we couldn't have stalled hash rate for a long stretch of time if, you know, a mining company was co-opted or pools were, you know, became regulated. But it seems to me like someone somewhere in a separate, in separate jurisdiction could step in and say, okay, we're going to spin up a mining pool and we're going to start. I think the hardware is probably a little bit more difficult, but even if we were stuck with the hardware that we currently have for a stretch of time, as you know, someone figured out how to bring new hardware online, it seems like we'd survive. Like it's, you know, it's not like an existential crisis. And it's simple mining. Like if I bought and hosted a miner through you, do I have optionality on any pool that I want to point to?
Yeah, we have some partnerships with some pools that that we, you know, that we work with and we partner with to get reduced fees. But you're under no obligation. You know, you can use whatever pool that you prefer. You simply set up your pool account. You know, we get the information and we, you know, set up your machine according to, you know, to your instructions, and you can change it at any point in time. So,
and the way most pools work, and so the exception I think is Ocean. Is like it's called an FPPS model, where effectively what you're doing is you're getting a steady cash flow, right? And if you know Bitcoin price drops or hash rate increases immensely, the pool might eat some of that cost. But in, you know, in a bull market, or if hash rate were to drop significantly, you know, they might benefit from what they're paying you on a monthly basis. Is that approximately correct?
Yeah. And I just add to that and say, yeah, FPPS models are essentially you're getting your fair share for the hash rate that you're contributing based on, you know, today's value of what you should be earning, essentially, based on the price and on the difficulty of the network. So, you know, you're going to get paid out in Bitcoin directly from these pools. It's going to be, it's more so on the fees side of the market. So most of these pools are going to be paying out an average fee per the last, you know, 144 blocks, which is like the last one day's worth of fees per block. So there's advantages and disadvantages, you know, if you're on an FPPS pool, you know, the mining pool that you're with might mine a bunch of blocks that have really, really high fees. And then you're only going to get the average for the last day, which might be substantially lower. Could also be to your benefit, because if, you know, during that high fee time, if your mining pool doesn't mine a single block, they're still paying you out based on the average, which is going to be elevated from, you know, obviously the mining pool not mining any blocks. So it's kind of just a fair way to distribute those rewards, and over, you know, across a long enough time horizon, you know, that's where it really starts to even out.
So if I understood and recall Bitcoin Mechanics, one of his issues with FPPS, it was something to the effect of with Ocean, they had clients who would tell him, I'm making more with Ocean, even though you're only mining a block or two every week, but there's like fully transparent payouts versus FPPS. And he's like, I can't even believe it, but it seems to be true. Is there any concern with that? I know this isn't your business. I'm just kind of from someone who's in the space. Just trying to, you know, sift through this stuff. Do you have any concerns that pools might be, you know, it's sort of an opaque, the payout process is opaque. And so you might not be getting the cut that you would deserve, you know, given the hash rate you are contributing.
Sure. Yeah, we've done an analysis of, you know, our partners and found to be, you know, the data to be very, you know, very, very, very close to what, you know, it looks like that it should be, you know, to the point where we have no concerns, you know, on that. I'm sure there is maybe some potential bad actors in the space where that would be a little bit more of a concern. But yeah, it's certainly a situation. The difference between, you know, ocean and FPPS pool is, some miners rely on that, you know, consistent cash flow, and they you know, they have bills that they need to pay, and they need sort of that guaranteed, you know, daily payout, if you will, versus a different pool like Ocean, for example, where you're sort of limited to when Ocean actually mines that block, which can be, you know, much more, you know, volatile and unpredictable, if you will, to forecast, maybe to operate a business and pay your expenses and those sorts of things.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think you know, the all of the concerns that the folks at Ocean bring up, I mean, I think at least from my perspective, are well received. Mm-hmm. But I think I generally agree with you on a lot of these things. And it seems to me like to your point, if your ultimate need is cash flow, then perhaps paying a premium by not receiving perhaps the, you know, the optimal return could be helpful, you know, and versus optimizing how much you're paid out intermittently, you know, or sporadically. So that makes sense. So in your mind, what's the biggest variable to success in this very competitive industry of mining? Is it hash rate? Is it what the price action in dollars is doing? Is it just your energy costs? So what is it that you sort of highlight as most important?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's all of those variables that you mentioned. And then I think maybe the last piece is, you know, operational execution. Again, if your machine is not online, nothing else really matters. So I think the operational execution is something that we, you know, have really, you know, developed from the ground up over the past few years to have a really, really high level premium white glove offering to ensure that, you know, your machine is going to be online. And if it does have an issue, we have the ability and the team and the knowledge and the know-how to get that fixed and get it back online quickly. So I think operational execution is probably, you know, first and foremost, but obviously the other variables are also very important too as well.
So you said that you think hash rate's obviously going to continue to increase over time. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Mm-hmm. Do you have any predictions, or obviously, you know, you don't talk about ROI or, you know, but do you have any thoughts on like where are we headed in terms of price and what the implications are for the mining industry here in the next 12, 18 months?
You know, I like to remain pretty, you know, pretty indifferent on those, you know, guesses. Obviously everyone I think is very bullish right now. You know, we're near all-time highs in price currently, and I think there's a lot of bullish expectations, you know, over the course of the next, call it 12 to 18 months. You know, I don't like to throw out any wild guesses by any means. I think Bitcoin's going to do what it's going to do, and you know, if it goes up, that's great, and to a certain degree, if it goes down, that's fine too, you know what I mean? So Yeah.
You can always buy more. So exactly. Yeah, sometimes it's nice when Bitcoin goes on sale.
Yeah.
All right. Last question for you. What is an unpopular opinion that you hold, and bonus points if it's also unpopular amongst Bitcoiners more broadly?
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be unpopular against Bitcoiners, but I would say, you know, Bitcoin mining's energy consumption is certainly a hot topic. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that generally speaking, energy consumption kind of has a negative connotation associated with it. And, you know, I'm very much a believer that we need much more energy production and production and consumption. If you look, one of the easiest ways to measure human quality of life is annual kilowatt hours of consumption. There's no such thing as a rich country that has a low annual kilowatt hour consumption. They're directly perfectly correlated. The richest countries in the world are using the most annual kilowatt hours of consumption per capita. So I think it's a situation where Bitcoin mining can really help accelerate and, you know, increase energy production. Bitcoin miners are buyers of, you know, low cost energy 24/7, 365, and that can really help improve the economics of building out these different, you know, power plants, you know, renewable energy sources. So, and that's what we're going to need just, you know, as we continue to grow, you know, globally and continue to do lots of different things. We just need more and more and more energy over time. You know, there's lots of things going on with AI, and, you know, everybody can kind of see the direction that that's going to be going, but that that's going to involve a lot of computing power and a lot of energy consumption associated with it. And, you know, most people, like I said, I think correlate energy usage as bad. But I think the opposite. I think we need to have much more energy production. We're going to be using much more energy in the future from a consumption standpoint. And those are only positive things, which is going to directly correlate with a overall improved human quality of life.
Okay. So I do have a couple quick follow-up questions to that. So would you argue that the source of like the energy use concerns that you hear in the mainstream, is that just a function of a misunderstanding of the grid and how it operates and how electricity is produced and delivered?
Yeah, I would agree. There's a lot of misconceptions and, on the understanding of, you know, exactly how the grid works, how energy is produced, how energy is delivered, how, you know, renewables are great. But again, if the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining, we still have to have power come from somewhere. You'll start to see this in very, you know, dramatic situations where if, you know, things happen in the middle of winter when it's minus 10 degrees and there's a power outage, all of a sudden people start to not care about where the energy comes from. It doesn't matter if it's coal, natural gas, wind, they just want power because they want to heat their home. So I think that's something that's very, very important. Like I said, I think we can all probably agree that we don't want to turn on a whole bunch of coal plants for all of our, you know, energy production. But I think there's a good opportunity to look, you know, at new nuclear technology as a, you know, base load as we continue to expand more and more renewables. That'll deliver more power. There's going to be intermittency, and that's where Bitcoin mining can really help balance, you know, those intermittent times where there, you know, power might not be available. So, yeah, I think there are some misconceptions there. And I think we are very fortunate here in the U.S. to have a very reliable grid system, where in other parts of the world, you have regular brownout or blackouts. And, you know, maybe if we had more of those situations in the U.S., there wouldn't be as many concerns because people would just want energy.
Yeah.
In the days when it's, you know, 95 degrees outside and you want to run your air conditioning, you know, if you don't have power, I think you're going to quickly change your mind on where that power comes from.
Yeah, it's easy to be an activist when you're comfortable. Yes. So you hit on one other thing, AI. I'm just curious, is that something that you might factor into your business? I mean, it seems like you've got the infrastructure to potentially support some of that in Iowa and perhaps elsewhere. Is that on your radar in terms of a piece of your business?
Yeah, I think it's on every, you know, Bitcoin mining company's radar. You know, certainly you're hearing, you know, lots of, you know, large public and, you know, other private companies that do Bitcoin mining that are also, you know, moving towards, you know, high power compute for at least a portion of their business. You know, it obviously works very well with the existing infrastructure that we're already building out. So something that's on our radar, you know, I think that there's going to, it's still very, very early on in that industry. And you're probably going to see some, you know, some volatility and lots of different things happen. So we're keeping an eye on it. And I think there is going to be very much in the long term, there's going to be a significant amount of demand for, you know, for AI infrastructure for sure.
Yeah. Terrific. Well, hey, I appreciate your time, Adam. How about you give a handoff? Where can people find you, learn more about Simple Mining, follow you on Twitter or whatever?
Sure. Yeah. Twitter is a great spot to start with. We're pretty active there. It's just @SimpleMining.io. You can visit our website. And if you're interested in learning more, we have, you know, you can book a call, schedule a virtual or in-person tour at our facilities. Our website's just simplemining.io. And yeah, you know, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out there and set up a call or follow us on Twitter.
Very cool. Adam, thank you so much for your time today, man. I appreciate it. And look forward to catching up with you again sometime in the future.
Yeah, it's great chatting with you. Thanks again for having me on. Appreciate it.
Take care. Have a good one, man. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Adam. I really enjoyed getting to talk with him. It's, as I said, an industry, a space within Bitcoin that I know relatively little about, and I thought this was very informative. Check them out if you're interested in Bitcoin mining. Follow them on X. And of course, if you are interested in Bitcoin self-custody, securing the most valuable asset ever to exist properly, check out the Bitcoin Way. You can schedule a time to meet with a member of our team and learn more about our services related to self-custody, online privacy, Plan B options. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Also, you can follow us on X at @thebitcoinway_ and follow me on X at @theothermjordan. I would love to have feedback, thoughts, comments about the podcast. I'm always looking to learn and improve. And I've got my own newsletter, blackhatbitcoin.substack.com, where every week I share just a brief bit about Bitcoin, my thoughts on the space, what's going on, something you might enjoy if you're interested. It's usually a 2 to 3 minute read. That's all for today. Appreciate you joining in. Until next time, this is Michael signing off.